Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. As business owners, we intuitively understand the benefits of having team harmony. Yes, it creates a much more enjoyable day for us. It creates a much better patient experience, which means that we go home happier for our families and all of that really good stuff. But it also leads to retention of staff. And retention of staff means that we have less turnover, we have increased productivity, increased profitability. So there's some very good commercial reasons as well as some psychosocial reasons to really focus on team harmony. What's missing, though, are the actual tools, the processes, and the structure to create it. The other missing piece, of course, is what to do when the wheels fall off, when things go awry. How do we handle that? So today, our conversation is specifically about creating team harmony and what to do when things go a little bit wonky or a little bit off track. And I'm delighted to be joined by Catherine Gillespie. Catherine is an absolute expert in this area. She has a plethora of degrees in this space, as well as a breadth and depth of experience that is incredible. She's worked with large multinationals, small SMEs, sporting teams, and the like. She has a background in elite sports as a netball player, as well as a netball coach, and she is the recipient of the Australian Sports Medal Award as well. So she is incredibly well-credentialed in this space, and I know that you're going to want to have your pen and paper handy because we go through some very specific processes, and she outlines some very cool and unique ways to be able to get this right in your practice. So we talk a lot about workflow. We talk about creating smooth crossover from workflow areas. We talk about setting standards of expectation in the workplace and making sure that the team live up to those. We talk about the importance of interpersonal communication and relationships. We talk about how to handle conflict between two staff members. We talk about making sure that we're doing all the right things on a day-to-day basis to ensure that the practice is moving smoothly and harmoniously in the right direction. Catherine has a ton of really good resources on her websites, which are workplaceconflictresolution.com.au as well as workplaceharmonysolutions.com.au. And I'm going to really suggest you head across to those websites and check out the tools and resources that she's got there. So without any further ado, I'd love to welcome Catherine Gillespie to the podcast. Catherine Gillespie, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here. How's things with you?
Thank you, Jesse. I'm really happy to be speaking with you on the Savvy Dentist Podcast today. Everything's going really well. Business is busy, which is a little bit unfortunate, really, in one sense that we've got conflict in our workplaces. But in the other hand, I'm really pleased that business owners and managers are being proactive in seeking my support to resolve conflict and have harmonious workplaces. So pretty positive, I think.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things that I've observed in the world at the moment is, you know, read the news, watch the news, whatever you want to do. It just seems like there's conflict everywhere. It seems like there's, I don't know, it seems like a very acrimonious place if you read the news or watch the news at the moment. And I know that's a snapshot of society. It's not the real world in its entirety. But it does feel a little bit to me that the conflict resolution part of the workforce is something requiring a little more attention than may have done over the past few years. Is that something you've observed, a bit of an uptick in that kind of space?
I agree with you. I think people are feeling very sort of entitled and focused on themselves and how they're feeling, and without having broader perspectives about other people in their workplaces, it does tend to set fertile ground for conflict to occur. So I think our society actually is moving into a more self-focused arena, and we're feeling more entitled to judge other people and have things work out for ourselves. And I think that's also pervading into our workplaces, and we're seeing more conflict in our workplaces.
Yeah. Now, you've got a really, really interesting and diverse background, which obviously I want to kind of go through and plumb those depths of your experience as we go through our conversation. But before we do kind of get into your work and what you do and your background in elite sports, I do want to actually just kind of talk about why it is that we've got this culture that seems to be self-entitled, self-focused. Is it the social media state that we live in where we're constantly judging ourselves compared to others? I don't know the answers, but I'm curious what your thoughts might be as to why you think we're going down this path, why it is that as a consequence of that, we're getting some more conflict. And as a consequence of that, why is it that workplaces are just getting a little, I suppose, trickier to navigate for some people?
I think it's a reflection of our social fabric that, one, we have many more opportunities to be critical and judgmental of other people through social media, with television programs that are sort of reality-based where we get to judge other people in their performance. I also think that there is a lack of social cohesion. I think less people belong to clubs and organisations where they work together for the greater good of the community. And also, many of us haven't been through any traumatic events like recessions or wars where we've had to come together with a common purpose and work together. So it's quite an individualistic society at the moment, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about coming together for a common good, because I have a definition of a team that kind of ties into that, because sometimes people assume that because we work together, we're therefore a team. But my definition of a team is something a little broader than that, or more specific in some senses, but broader in others. And that is a group of people that come together to pursue a common goal and who share a set of common values, behavioral standards, as well as common performance objectives. And so what I wanted to ask you about in your work, again, coming back to your elite sports background with netball perhaps, is you've got this team that's obviously looking to come together, win a match, win a tournament, whatever it happens to be. How is it that you can create that culture, that cohesion that you spoke about that might be lacking elsewhere? How is it that we could consciously go about and create that? Because we see it in sporting worlds, we see it coming through in various activities, but how do we consciously go about creating that?
I think in the sporting arenas, there is much more communication between the coach and the player and perhaps various other support functions, you know, physios, medical, psychologists, etc. And I don't think we see the same level of communication happening in our workplaces. So even though we might think we've come together for a common purpose at work, it's not always explicitly stated. So that's one of the major differences that I see, is conversations, goals, objectives are much more specifically communicated in a team environment, and there's a huge focus on performance and conversations around performance and improving performance. That's, you know, essentially when you're selected into a team, for most teams, you know, it's about continuous improvement, unless it's a purely social team, which is fantastic just to have fun, which, you know, some people when they come into the workforce think that they come in and they do their job and they stay at the same level they're at. There's not that focus of we are here to continuously improve and continuously upgrade our performance.
Yeah, so it's really interesting actually. You talk about the focus on goals, the focus on performance. I've got a daughter who's an elite sports person. She's a gymnast. And every time I think that my day might be tough, I think of her with her Chinese and Russian coaches. And
oh, yes.
It's pretty hardcore.
I've seen it.
It's pretty hardcore. But it's really interesting because they know exactly what they're trying to achieve. They know what their bar routine should be. They know what their beam routine should be. They know exactly what their vault should be. And they're consciously and consistently working towards it. And they get scored every single session. They know exactly what they're doing. And it's the same with swimmers, I suppose, or runners, where you've got a time or a clock to run against or to swim against. But how do you then translate that culture of performance and knowing exactly what the goal is into the workplace? I mean, we speak about the goals and the vision and all the rest of it, but you're really candidly, from a business perspective, there are multiple goals. Obviously, as dentists, we try to provide great care for our patients. That's clearly a goal. But from the commercial point of view, sometimes I know that dentists find it hard to talk about those things because they don't want to feel that they're preoccupied by those things, and yet they're an important part of running a successful enterprise. So how do you kind of talk about those things in a way that makes it feel like that's you're not obsessing about that particular element, but still recognizing its importance?
I do agree. It's important. One of the best team facilitations I had was for a small medical center where the owner pretty much bared the financials to the team. to help them to understand that their performance directly impacted on the financials of the business and whether they actually ended up having a job or not. So there are quite a few, even large organisations, multinational organisations, that are really transparent with a lot of business information, because it directly impacts on whether those staff have a job or not, and how well they perform does impact on how well the business performs. I'm not suggesting that dentists do have to share that level of information, but I think a degree of transparency does help to indicate to the workers that their work directly impacts on the business, and that what they do either supports the success of the business or its detriment. So yeah, and another thing that I find really interesting is that for most mediations I do, we always get back to an agreement of we don't meet and talk often enough. And so let's make sure we regularly have those team meetings that we said we'd have, but sort of have fallen off the radar, reinstate those.
Yeah, so I really resonate with that point, Catherine. And so on that note, you know, when there's communication that might be too infrequent or communication that might not even be effective, and that can lead to, I suppose, miscommunication ultimately. And your miscommunication is the, I suppose, the fertile ground for conflict. So tell me a little bit about your experience in how these conflicts arise in the first place, because we've spoken a little about setting the culture and having that communication, but I just want to extend that so that what happens when we get that wrong, how does that manifest?
Yes, yeah, so without a common purpose, without common understanding of what we're at work to do, I think a lot of people enter into the workplace thinking that, you know, we all need to play nice and get along nicely with each other and do our work. And as soon as they feel like they're being judged or they're not being treated nicely by somebody else, the first thing that happens is their defences go up and they then start to question and query and judge how other people are treating them. And so I think there's two aspects there. One is there is a really big important need for us to build rapport and understanding with each other so that we're less likely to interpret somebody else's behaviours as being negative towards us. And the second thing is to set the boundaries of what are we at work for, how are we supposed to work with each other. And I think the most harmonious and successful workplaces are ones where they have a professional focus on their workplace relationships and their work tasks, and not the fact that we have to be friendly and nice and socially get along well with each other while we're at work.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because I have to tell you, Catherine, my greatest failing as an employer over the years is over familiarity. It's been something that in my workplace, for as long as I can remember, I really like a relaxed environment, but there is this line where being friendly and being friends is a very blurred line sometimes, and it's easy to cross, and it's very hard to unravel when things go awry. So in my own experience, when we've had some little mix-ups, or I'd say they're probably even a little more than little mix-ups from time to time, it's usually, in my experience, been a result of me blurring that line between professionalism and being friendly slash friends, and then it's very hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yes, yes. Most people expect when we have a friendly relationship that you will empathise with me, and when I have a difficult circumstance, you'll be lenient and relaxed on me. And so, you know, they forget that you still have to run a business with particular standards, and you can't just keep varying standards all the time to different degrees for different people. It becomes very hard to be consistent as a manager and actually do what is right for the business. I think as friends, we can expect too much from each other, and it's very easy to for our unconscious bias to come into play. And then, of course, you get accused of being biased and showing preferential treatment to somebody else as well. So I don't think it always works out well.
Yeah, look, I agree with you that how would you suggest that? Because, you know, quite candidly, from a dentist listening to this perspective, or to this podcast, I should say, what they often experience on a day-to-day basis with their dental assistant, for instance, who might be considerably younger than them, and maybe, depending on how old the dentist is, but oftentimes there is an age gap, not always, and you're sitting knee-to-knee, essentially, in very close proximity with this person, it's pretty hard to maintain all of those boundaries, because when you're sitting that close to someone for 6 or 7 hours a day, invariably conversations turn to things of a personal nature. You know, what did you do on the weekend? How's your mum? All that kind of stuff. And so all of those sorts of conversations make it, I suppose, easier to slide down that path. So just from a practical perspective, for someone who's working in very close proximity to someone who they might have reporting to them, how do you go about keeping that relationship intact, productive, effective, and friendly, but not friends?
Yes. I think that it's okay to ask, how's your family, and did you have a good weekend? But to start to go into the details about people offloading, about all the detail about what they did and all of the emotion behind what they did, I think there's a point where there should be no emotion involved in that conversation, because that's, I think, really where the hook is that ties us into emotional relationships with people, and that's then leads us to conflict. So yes, have those discussions, but keep them at a limited detail level and in a logical perspective. Don't ask too many questions that unravel the story and go too deep, and keep it probably a little bit more at a superficial level.
Yeah, okay. So you don't want to be, you know, when someone's broken up with their partner, you don't want to be crying in the corner with them, "Oh, I know, he's such a horrible person," you know, all that sort of stuff.
We don't want to get
down and do that.
Yeah, we're not, and I think sometimes business owners can be very caring people, and there is a line there where they're not counsellors and they're not psychologists, and if they do feel a staff member is struggling, it would be much more applicable to offer them some counselling, or suggest that they have some counselling by a professional, even if the business would like to pay for the first session perhaps, and that just keeps those boundaries in place as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So some really practical advice there. So for anyone listening there, I think there's that really important boundary to keep in place. Friends versus friendly is a really important distinction to make. But I wanted to come back to your sporting background, because it is a really interesting life that you've led, Catherine. And with your netball team, you know, my observation with sporting teams that function really well is they train much more than they compete, and they're constantly going through those processes, angling for performance. What I wanted to do, just while we're talking sports and in particular your sport, I'm wondering, in your netball experience as a player and as a coach, what do you see as the essential ingredients to a really harmonious team? You've spoken about the communication, you've spoken about the focus on performance. What else do you think contributes to harmony?
So we have already spoken about having common goals and understanding exactly what the action plans and the breakdown is to be able to achieve success in that goal. I also think one of the other key ingredients that every member of the team realises that the overall success of the team is also directly linked to their individual personal success. So, you know, when people say to me there's no I in team, I completely disagree. You know, unless every individual in the team is performing, then the team doesn't succeed overall either.
Yeah, I remember making a comment to a dental assistant once about no I in team as a bit of a joke, and quick as a flash, she turned around and said to me, "Yes, Jesse, that's true, but there's five of them in individual brilliance," to which I had no reply. So, okay, so you're quite right. Obviously, the team succeeds or fails based on the individual performances. When it comes to a team where there's high pressure, like in the sporting team, you know, there are bound to be moments when things don't go awry. There are bound to be, or don't go so to plan, I should say, or when they do go awry. What sort of processes do you have in place then to be able to catch those things early so they don't escalate?
I think that's really reflective also of our workplaces as well, is that the coach has a keen eye looking out for both individual performance as well as then how each of those players interact and come together and work together as a team. And very often our managers and our workplaces are focused on the business and not necessarily on individual performance. And they're not skilled at then giving feedback to the individual around their performance, whereas a sporting coach is, that's their job. One would hope that they do that very, very well. So I would think that it's the amount of feedback and how specific that feedback is, the continual reviewing of the team and the goals. Does that match with where that sort of question you were asking me?
Yeah, it does. I think it's really relevant to everyone in business, because, you know, one of the things as a business owner is we tend to look at the horizon. We tend to look at where we're going, and sometimes we forget to turn around and make sure that the people who are on that journey with us are intact, that they're all getting along well, they feel like they're getting what they need out of the role as well. And the other thing that I find as well is when there's miscommunication about the expectations of the individual on that team. So most people I know come to work wanting to do a good job. There's not many people I've encountered that say, yeah, let's go to work today and see if we can completely stuff up this business. But for me, it seems that conflict tends to arise when there is a mismatch between the expectations of the owner and what the employee or team member feels is their role and their job. And so the employee or team member is delivering according to what they see is required of them, but the business owner hasn't clearly articulated their expectations of them. Is that something that you see?
I would agree completely. There's always usually some confusion around role clarity. And sometimes I think that there's a high degree of expectation of mental telepathy in workplaces. And, you know, a manager will start to get frustrated with a team member because they're not doing their job as it's expected that they would. But you're right, the team member thinks they're doing their job just as they should. And over time, the person doesn't improve their performance and the manager wonders why. Can't they see that they should be doing it this way? And there must be something wrong because they don't want to do it the right way. And really, it's just that it's never been explicitly communicated to them or reminded to them and given feedback. The other area that I see of great importance as well is people being prepared to take responsibility for their performance and be prepared to take on constructive feedback, work out a plan together of how to improve and then execute it and be supported and encouraged to continue improving in their performance.
Yeah, and I think coming back to that point there you just made about the responsibility of the individual on the team to take responsibility for their performance, I wanted to come back to you said earlier, in just going back to the sporting analogy, that sporting coaches are really well skilled at giving timely feedback. So I think as business owners, no one teaches you how to do that. Typically as dentists, I remember going through dental school, it was very binary. It was either perfect or it was wrong. You know, there wasn't much in between. And so sometimes I've noticed that when we treat our staff or try to provide feedback to our staff, that we can be a little clumsy in the way that we give that feedback. So just if we want our team members to be responsible for their performance, then surely as leaders, we've got to be responsible for giving good feedback as well. So how do you give constructive feedback in a way that actually works?
I think what can be really supportive for managers is to make sure that there is a specific time set aside to give feedback, so that there might be a regular team meeting for feedback to everybody to keep everyone on track with where the business is going and what are our issues that we all need to discuss and resolve and make sure we're all on the same page. Then there needs to be individual one-to-one meetings set up on a regular basis so that we know that there is a time we can raise things if we need to. And then also there's opportunities that during the day we'll be giving regular informal feedback. The research, though, shows that for people to feel like they work in a positive environment, they need to be hearing 3 positive comments to every 1 perceived to be negative comment, although I think that all comments could be constructive. They don't need to be considered to be negative, but if we put it in that way. So, one, I would encourage all of our business owners to be more frequent in how much informal feedback they do give, so that it's not a shock or surprise when people do hear that. Make sure that they're giving lots of feedback around thank you, good job, well done, and try to make the feedback specific to a task that somebody's doing. Because when we usually give positive feedback, it almost sounds as though we're saying you're a good person, well done, great job, I love the stuff you do. And then, so when we give negative feedback, it can be taken that we're also attacking the person. So I would really much prefer that our feedback is very task or behaviour focused. And so instead of saying great job, it would be when you mixed this or did that, or you spoke to the client in that way, that was really well done.
Yeah, excellent. So it's about playing the ball and not the man, right?
Yes. And when we give positive feedback, we don't think about that. So I think if we can set the expectation by giving both positive feedback, and when we have to bring up something that's not so positive, thinking about planning that conversation and saying it when everybody's calm, in the right moment, perhaps not in front of the clients. Starting with an I statement can also be helpful. And when it's planned, it can be sometimes, I know I'm interrupting my own thoughts here, but sometimes when I speak to managers, they start to give me all these mixed messages about what they think about their staff member. And I have to actually cut through that and break it down for them into task or behavior so that they're very specific with their feedback. So taking time to sit and actually write what it is that you want to give feedback about so that it's not clouded by your own feelings or some irrelevant things, really, that it's very specific and focused.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's really, really sage advice. Now, Catherine, in your work in workplace conflict resolution, and of course your website is workplaceconflictresolution.com.au, you've got a couple of websites, but that's a big one. I wanted to talk to you about the types of conflict, because sometimes when we think of conflict, we think of fireworks and volcanic eruptions and all of that. And certainly, you know, that may happen, but sometimes there can be passive types of conflict. So one of the things I would really love to get your thoughts on is, how do you call people out when they're being that passive aggressive? How do you deal with that?
Yes, I think that having a common shared language is really helpful to being able to talk about behaviours that are not helpful and not constructive, either in workplace relationships or in terms of workplace tasks. And I encourage people to speak up early rather than let things go, and to use common language that everybody knows what it means. So if somebody's being passive by avoiding doing a task or avoiding speaking to somebody, then I don't see anything wrong with saying, I noticed you've avoided doing this, or it seems like you're avoiding talking to somebody else. I also don't see anything wrong with having a conversation around, when you spoke to Mary, you seemed a little bit angry. Is everything okay? And actually pointing out the behaviour and opening it up for discussion. Sometimes we tend to hang back and not actually have those conversations that are quite pointed.
Yeah, okay. So I guess, again, it's about being very specific about the behaviour. It's being very specific about the conversation and not letting it go unremarked upon, because that's how it all festers. That's how it builds up. And then, of course, it goes from passive-aggressive or that silent kind of conflict to something that a little or considerably more open.
Yeah. Sometimes when I've seen passive-aggressive behaviours happen in workplaces, the person themselves either has some other issues outside, or either inside work or outside of work, that's taking up their mind space, or they're actually feeling like everybody completely misinterprets them and they're getting angry about how they're being misinterpreted. And of course, as they get more angry, people do continue to misinterpret them. Yes. So I think it's about cutting that cycle and having conversations early.
Yeah, so again, deal with it early, have a conversation, try and understand the context and perspective that's going on, and then deal with what's happening.
Yes, and I think that can be really difficult for business owners. Like you said, a lot of them are trained in particular area of expertise and not in giving feedback and developing interpersonal relationships and workplaces and those sorts of things. But most people really appreciate having a conversation, and just coming from a genuine place is a really good start to making people feel relaxed. And if the intention is to help the other person and help have a harmonious workplace, then people feel that intention and they're more likely to respond positively. But when you go into a conversation quite frustrated or angry with what somebody's done, that intention comes through first and puts the other person's defences up, and it's not a good conversation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So again, it's just trying to keep the emotions down as much as possible, trying to understand the intention with which you're trying to communicate and convey that, and perhaps even pre-frame that up front, I guess, is what you're saying, is be explicit about your intention rather than letting it be assumed, and perhaps even incorrectly assumed, and then having, I guess, that conversation from there. So one of the things that I wanted to go through then is, sometimes as a business owner, you'll have conflict in the workplace, and it's not always involving you. It could be involving two co-workers. And so you don't want to be in the middle of that. But at the same time, as the leader of the business, as the owner of the business, it's your responsibility to try and find a pathway to resolution. So what particular process or advice do you have for people listening who find themselves being piggy in the middle, trying to deal with all of that stuff?
I see that happen a lot. And I see that it becomes very stressful on all three people. And usually when it's not handled well, it sets up even more conflict between the two co-workers. And so if it appears there's conflict between two staff and they don't appear to be addressing it promptly and successfully, I think there's a role there for the business manager to come in and speak to each staff member separately and then prepare them to bring the two staff together to talk about their issues and resolve it amongst themselves. I think one of the biggest mistakes the business manager makes is goes and talks to each of those staff members separately and tries to resolve it for them. And I don't think that's ever really successful unless we bring both of the parties together to have that conversation themselves.
Yes, that's facilitating them, not kind of solving it.
Yes. Yes. Don't take the responsibility for solving it, because we disempower those staff members and we're not going to fully resolve it to their satisfaction necessarily. Plus, we're also taking away the opportunity for them to upskill themselves to have that conversation and resolve matters between themselves as well.
Yeah, and I guess when you bring two staff members together, there's the potential for emotions to be running pretty high because no one really enjoys a conflict. And so I guess it's, if you're the business owner, it's about trying to keep a level head, trying to keep the emotions in check, giving each person the space to express themselves without some form of interruption. And so the other person hears the perspective of their workmate. And I guess, Catherine, what I'm hearing you say as well is there's got to be an outcome and there's got to be an agreed way forward. And I guess everyone's got to hold themselves to account for that, correct?
Correct. That's often missing. There's a couple of things that often miss from that conversation. One is that the manager expects the parties to play nicely in that conversation and so feels uncomfortable with any emotion that might be shown. But an emotion is a normal part of that conversation. So some emotion is good to let it happen. And we don't get good outcomes where we just expect everybody to play nice. We actually do need to encourage some robust conversation and some debate so we can express ourselves and get to the bottom of the matter. But we must finish that conversation on, so how do we move forward from here? What are both of you going to take responsibility for? Be very clear about that so that we can then hold people to account if they don't follow through on the agreed actions, and we can support them and encourage them and congratulate them when they do.
Okay, fantastic. And so I guess when you hold them to account, do you then have regular check-ins after that? I'm just trying to make sure that anyone listening to this can follow the process and go, okay, I speak to them individually, try and get a perspective, bring them together, have that conversation. After that conversation, is there then the process to check in around that again?
Yes, I would support the managers to make notes, just quite summary notes in a diary to say that conversation happened and these are the agreed outcomes, to follow up with people perhaps the next day, just individually, a quick check-in, how you're doing, follow up a week later, and probably bring the parties back together again in about a month, you know, take them out for a coffee, bring them back together, get them talking in front of each other and see how things are going, to just, you know that we've had the conversation and go, phew, we got through that, and then never return to it again is setting up a recipe for disaster, because sometimes those parties still need a little bit of support to, and plus for a manager to check in like that shows that they really care.
Of course.
And your staff will appreciate that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, it's just making sure that everyone's adhering to the commitments they made or honouring the commitments they made, seeing whether there's any things, I suppose, that need to be addressed as a result of that. And then again, just recommitting to move forward together.
Yes, that sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's great. And yeah, look, we've seen in my work, I've seen a couple of people execute on that really, really elegantly. And I've seen also examples where it hasn't gone so elegantly. And I think, you know, the process you've outlined there so generously, I think, is a really good tool. So for anyone listening, I would really encourage you to hit pause, rewind, go back and write down that process that Catherine's given you, because what she shared with you is absolute gold. And we've seen it work plenty of times. And what Catherine has shared there is really practical and actionable. I'd really encourage you to do that. Catherine, I do want to talk a little bit about if you're listening to the podcast and you're not a business owner, but you're seeing conflict in the workplace and you see other team members you're having conflict. And again, how do you as another team member deal with that? Is that something you should report? Is it something you should encourage others to deal with? You know, if you're a part of a team, where do you think your responsibility lies, even if you're not directly involved, to maintain that culture, to preserve the focus on the goal? How do you be a good team member in that space?
I think you've said that really well, Jesse. What is it that makes us a good team member? And turning a blind eye to something that's causing tension in the team means that we're not actually participating as a full team member. I'm really encouraging in all the work I do with clients now, pushing the concept of the bystander very heavily. And the role that a bystander can play is to speak to each of the parties separately. I mean, if they can, I would suggest that they intervened and de-escalated the situation then and there. But either it may not be safe to do that, or it may not be appropriate, and we may not feel comfortable to. So that's a skill-based thing, which I'd leave up to each person in the team to determine. But at least after the event, to check in with each person to see, are they okay? Are they able to manage that situation? Do they know what they can do in that situation? And if there is the need to then escalate it to a team manager or a business manager and just make them aware that that situation happened, I think that's appropriate for a bystander as well.
Yeah, fantastic. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Catherine, because you're really well known in this space and you've got so many runs on the board that you've kind of seen it all. What I really wanted to ask you, and maybe I should have asked you this up front, but how do you define harmony? Because sometimes I also wonder, in our drive to create a harmonious workplace, I wonder whether we're actually latching on to what harmony is. How do you define harmony? Is it the absence of disagreement? Probably not. But what actually are the hallmarks of a really well-functioning, harmonious workplace? You know, we've spoken about some of those elements with goals and all those stuff, but in terms of the interactions between the team members, what are the hallmarks of a harmonious workplace?
So I think there are two types of interactions that happen, or two basic types of interactions that happen in a team. One is our interpersonal communication, and the other one is the crossover of our workflow. And harmonious teams will have clear roles, tasks, clear understanding of workflow and how that works with each other. So there's no confusion around, well, that's your job, not my job, and why didn't she do this, etc. Harmonious teams know the standards of work they're expected to perform to, and they know that if somebody falls below that standard of expectation, they will be spoken to. It's not up to us to judge their performance or make sarcastic comments about their performance, but to allow the team leader or the manager to address that and have confidence to know that they will. Just might add in here that one of the other biggest conflicts I see in workplaces is that when people, we're talking about low-level conflict resolution when we're talking about bringing two people together to sort things out and be able to move forward. But what if one person actually is continually yelling or swearing at somebody else, or does something which actually should be a disciplinary process? I see managers hanging back from not evoking a disciplinary process, and that in itself creates a lot of conflict within the rest of the team also. So I just wanted to make that point, that that's going to distract from our harmonious team if a manager's not prepared to take disciplinary action when it's required.
Yeah, I think that's a really important lesson for the leaders there, because obviously to an extent you get what you tolerate, and you run the risk of losing your good people if you don't address poor behavior. And I probably would say every one of us has seen that over the years. We've had a good person leave because there's been a failure to address something or other in the business. And it's a lesson bitterly learned, I think. And so I think you're absolutely right. If you've got that kind of behavior going on, it just has to be addressed. But it's also a little bit frightening to deal with someone who's quite aggressive in their behavior. So if you've got someone who's a little bit off the rails in your workplace, Catherine, for the business owners here listening, how do you address that? Because that can be quite confronting.
Yes. One, you know, no one should have to put up with highly aggressive behaviour in a workplace. And so the business owner does need to use their delegated authority as the employer to be able to set those boundaries and have those conversations. If
If the person is behaving in an unsafe manner, then you are entitled to request that they change their behaviours, or maybe they need to exit the workplace right then and there and leave the workplace, if we're talking about those levels of aggression. I'm not sure if that's what you were meaning. And I would be evoking a formal meeting straight away. Sometimes there's a lack of process or procedure known to business managers to be able to follow this, but issuing a formal letter to a employee to attend a formal meeting in terms of their behaviour, and putting a formal performance management process in place, and then following through on that and holding somebody account to their behaviours. It would be helpful if business managers had templates and set procedures around those sorts of things, so they felt confident to evoke them straight away.
Yeah, and the understanding here, or the assumption we're operating from, is it's not the business manager who's displaying that behaviour. Let's hope that's the case.
True.
Because there's probably some instances where it has been the business owner, and I guess it's about tempering, if that's the person who's listening to this, it's about tempering your own response, being, I suppose, able to put some distance between yourself so you're not provoked into a reaction. But how do you, as the business owner, we all have bad days, how do you keep your own emotions in check so that you can be the best leader at the same time, and not kind of slip into having, I suppose, an angry outburst, when even though you might be feeling incredibly frustrated?
Yes, there's a lot of strategies around managing our own personal behaviours and emotions in terms of our leadership style, and how do we look after ourselves to do that. So building our own levels of resilience, building our mindfulness abilities, being able to work at a highly concentrated and professional level in our tasks, and then being able to give ourselves little mind breaks and relax and calm down, and then reface what we need to face in the business again. So there's a lot there about personal management to make sure that we're operating at our best when we need to be operating at our best, and how do we manage those energy levels and stress levels to do that. And that will also therefore help us manage our emotions and be in a much better place to have those conversations when we need to.
Yeah, fantastic. I think a bit of self-care for the owner there goes a long way, and being, I suppose, as you say, present and aware of your own responses and reactions under certain circumstances, I think is really critical. Even in my own world, I know that if I'm tired or I've had an argument at home and I come to work, sometimes my temper might be a little shorter than it would otherwise be, not because of the people at work, but because I'm coming into the office with a recent experience that's perhaps frazzled me. And so for me, I know that if I walk into the workplace like that, it's not uncommon for me to go down to the cafe and just do my first hour of work down there, just to put a little bit of space between myself and everyone else, so that it's a little cone of protection for everyone. And that just helps me kind of put some distance between me and everyone else. Catherine, you've been incredibly generous with your knowledge today, and I really want to thank you for that. What I wanted to ask you as we wrap up our conversation is, what key messages would you leave business owners with when it comes to conflict resolution, whether it's the stuff that we've covered or anything that you might feel is a really useful addition? What do you see as some fundamentals that everyone should have in their back pocket, ready to go for harmonious workplaces and then dealing with conflict when it occurs?
My first piece of advice is, don't be quick to sweep it under the rug. Is acknowledge that it's there, and seek support to be able to address it, and ways to be able to address it. Be transparent and open with your team about the expectations you have for their performance and their contribution to a harmonious workplace, and perhaps even involve them in what they might set as the standards for that, and have a team charter to work forwards with. And be very quick as a business manager to reach out for help and discuss things and work on things and move forward, rather than sweep it to the side and think, oh, well, it'll get better, or we just need to focus on the business at the moment. That can wait. But the message, I suppose, there is just be more proactive in that space.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Catherine, again, thank you so much for coming on to our podcast and sharing your insights, your wisdom and your experience around not just how to create a harmonious workplace, which you've covered with a great deal of clarity, but also those strategies, those tips, those processes for dealing with the situation when it does come a little unstuck. For people who want to find out more about your work, they can head across to your website, of course, which we've got as workplaceconflictresolution.com.au. Are there any other resources that you would recommend our audience to check out and go and see to further their knowledge in this space?
Well, of course, we have the other website called workplaceharmonysolutions.com.au. So there'll be lots of materials on that website too if they'd like to check that out. And I think anything which is going to support that business manager to improve their own mindfulness, their own skill levels, staying involved with their professional peak bodies as well. You know, I think they're busy professional people. It's difficult to find those extra resources to help support them. So setting goals and making that a priority and just building on that little by little as they keep running their businesses will also be helpful as well.
Fantastic. Once again, Catherine, thank you so much for your time today. It's really time well spent for all our listeners to hear from you and get your advice and put it into place. So from all of us here at Savvy Dentist Podcast, thank you so much and hope we can catch up around the traps again soon.
That would be fantastic. An absolute pleasure to talk with you, Jesse. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. I really hope you had your pen and paper handy for that particular episode. And if you didn't, hit pause, go back, rewind and take some notes, because everything Catherine shared on that podcast was absolute gold. I know you're going to be able to take that information and implement it into your practice tomorrow with really great effect. I'd also really encourage you to head across to Catherine's websites, get the resources that I mentioned up front. And Catherine's also very nicely made this particular tool available for us. It's called the Gratitude Pad, and we'll put a link in the show notes there so you can get across and grab that. It's a really cool tool so that you can keep your team focused on being above the line in terms of their behavior, in terms of their attitude, and in terms of their daily activities. So being above the line versus below the line, it's a great little culture tool that Catherine has graciously made available to listeners of the podcast. So we'll put that in the notes for you as a gift for you guys. Our next guest on the show is going to be Stacey Brown Randall, and we're very, very excited to have her on the show next week. We're going to be talking all about referrals and how to generate them and how they can really transform your business. So make sure you tune in next week, because that is going to be gold. But until then, take good care, and we'll see you on the flip side. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.